headlines, Iran summons the Italian ambassador to lodge strong complaints over Rome's meddlesome remarks. A Palestinian official says nearly 50,000 Israeli settlers stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque in 2022. And Belarus summons Ukraine's ambassador after its military downs a Ukrainian S-300 missile. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iran has summoned the Italian ambassador to Tehran over Rome's, quote, meddlesome remarks about the recent riots in the country. The foreign ministry said it conveyed Tehran's strongest protest to the envoy about the comments made by some Italian politicians and reaffirmed that the selective approaches and double standards towards the issue of human rights are unacceptable and rejected. The ministry said Italy, which has violated the rights of Iranians by imposing illegal sanctions, and for his part, the Italian envoy said that he would convey Tehran's message to the relevant Italian authorities. Rome had called for more effective actions against Tehran in response to the recent riots. Iran saw a wave of disturbances following the September death of Mahsa Amini. The number of Israeli settlers storming the Al-Aqsa Mosque, a compound in the occupied West Bank, has hit a record in 2022. This is according to the Islamic Wafaq Department that is run by the Holy Site. The department's director said that nearly 50,000 fanatic settlers stormed the compound and violated its sanctity during the 2022 year. Azam Khatib said that the figure represents the highest ever number of violations of the mosque's compound in the occupied East Al-Quds. He added that Israeli settlers hurt Muslim sentiments by performing Jewish rituals and raising the Israeli flag inside the compound during their holidays. The official also warned that the regime's new right-wing government might make moves that could trigger religious wars in the region and the world. Meanwhile, Benjamin Netanyahu is now formally back in power in Israel, heading a right-wing cabinet, expected to escalate crackdown on Palestinians after months of growing violence across the occupied West Bank. Netanyahu was sworn in as prime minister following a video in parliament that brought in the most right-wing cabinet in the regime's history. Netanyahu formed his cabinet after signing agreements with the ultra-Orthodox and far-right parties, hundreds of left-wing and centrist activists, as well as other protesters, gathered in front of parliament to denounce Netanyahu's inauguration. The cabinet is aimed to expand West Bank settlements. Netanyahu's Likud party claims that Israelis have, quote, exclusive right to the entire Palestinian region. The Israeli behavior constitutes a dangerous escalation, and it will have repercussions for the entire region. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has warned that the new cabinet policies could trigger major unrest.
We in the Hamas movement issue a clear warning that the policies of this incoming government represent a triggering point for major unrest, which may extend beyond Palestine.
The spokesman said that the new Israeli cabinet was, quote, the most extreme terrorist, racist, and fascist regime. He said the new Israeli leaders will ramp up aggression against the Palestinians and their sanctities. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammad Shataya said The new cabinet is, quote, the most insolent. The inauguration comes amid days of Israeli violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, unprecedented in 20 years. Regime forces have killed about 220 Palestinians over the course of 2022. More than 50 of the victims were killed in the besieged Gaza Strip. Political commentator Tim Anderson says the principal objective of the new Israeli cabinet is to speed up colonization across the occupation territories.
What Netanyahu has done in the past really is destroy the fig leaf of the two-state option, which is still the official policy of both parties in the US. In other words, their major sponsor is still trying to hold up the fig leaf of two parties. Now, the current regime that Netanyahu has put together, its main objective is to accelerate the colonization process across the occupied territories. And this, of course, is going to further damage the reputation of the regime. So its international reputation, which has been run down for many years by Netanyahu in particular, is going further down that track. And it's harder and harder for the external sponsors to maintain this fig leaf of two states and the idea that there's some sort of peace process is possible there.
Belarus has summoned Ukraine's ambassador after its military said it had shot down Ukrainian air defense missiles in its territory. The foreign ministry conveyed its formal protest to the Ukrainian envoy. It described the event as extremely serious, urging Kiev to hold those responsible to account and prevent the recurrence of such incidents. On Thursday, Belarus's military downed an S-300 field from 5 kilometers from the border with Ukraine. Kiev acknowledged the incident but said that it did not rule out the deliberate provocation by Moscow to bring Minsk into the war. Belarus allowed Moscow to use its territory in February to start its offensive on Ukraine. Minsk, however, has announced that it would not participate in the war unless its own security is threatened. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky says the most regions of the country are without power, freezing cold following the latest Russian missile strikes. Zelensky said the Russian strikes have caused significant damage to the national power grid. He also added that the eastern and southern regions of the country are the worst hit by the attack. The Ukrainian president added that repair crews are doing their best to minimize the impact of the strikes. The head of Ukraine's grid operator had confirmed that the Russian strikes resulted in significant damage to the national grid. Russia has intensified missile strikes to Ukraine over the past couple of years. The latest blitz follows Moscow's rejection of a peace plan that Kiev proposed in November. Earlier, we discussed the recent U.S. decision involving potential arms sales to Taiwan with our guests in the news review. Let's take a listen.
The U.S. State Department has approved the potential sale of anti-tank systems to Taiwan, a move which is likely to anger China. The Pentagon says Volcano anti-tank mine-laying systems are likely to be sold to Taiwan for an estimated $180 million. Taiwan's Defense Ministry said in a statement that the sale would take effect in about a month. It said continuous U.S. military sales are, quote, the cornerstone of maintaining regional stability and peace. Potential deal comes as Taiwan claims it is under increasing pressure from China, citing frequent Chinese air drills near the island. China considers itself ruled Taiwan as its own territory and vows to take the island by force if necessary. Washington is Taiwan's strongest international backer and main supplier of arms. John Ross is a senior fellow at the Chongyang Institute for Financial Studies, joining us from London. And also from London, we have Tony Gosling, an investigative journalist. Welcome to you both, gentlemen. John Ross, let me first start with you. So we know that any time the U.S. does this, it has ulterior motives, which are not too much of a secret, obviously, and that is that it's a provocation against China, in a sense. Can China, or how should China react to each and every time that the U.S. sells military equipment? In this particular case, maybe it's noteworthy to talk about the types that were sold to Taiwan.
Well, China should respond in the way that it's doing so at the present time, which is firstly to make it clear strategically that it's, Taiwan is part of China, that it would is crossing the red lines of China and very, very dangerous for the United States to engage in the activity it's doing. And secondly, to continue to have a situation whereby the relation of forces is across the Taiwan Straits continuously moving in favor of mainland China and increasing its chances of reunification. I mean, in a certain sense, this sale of arms is ridiculous because Taiwan can't possibly defend itself against mainland China. And it's really the United States that is the only military force that's capable of intervening in this situation. So this is not really building up Taiwan. It's a military intervention by the United States into the situation. And China is perfectly well aware of that. I mean, we've seen the disastrous consequences of that type of activity in Ukraine, whereby the U.S. attempt to bring the door open for Ukraine to move into NATO unleashed the biggest war in Europe since World War II. Fortunately, nobody in Asia wants to go along with this, but the U.S. is intent upon creating a whole load of trouble, which neither China nor other people in the region want. So this is a very dangerous move in the U.S., and China will continue to respond to it in the way that it's been doing, which is in a very calm, logical and implacable way.
Okay. Well, Tony Gosling, maybe the question should be asked, is what's unfolding in that region, in the Southeast Asia region, mirroring what's happening in Ukraine prior to the special military operation? Because you're having what the U.S. is doing in terms of military sales to Taiwan, and we heard what happened with Japan, where they, I forget, it was triple the amount in terms of their defense budget, of which they have missiles that reach mainland China, and other countries that the U.S. is slowly but surely militarizing. Is it a valid comparison?
Well, the United States is talking here about regional security and peace, that this is supposed to help regional security and peace. Well, of course, it's not going to do anything for regional security. It's going to actually increase tensions. But look, we have to see both sides here, and these weapons are defensive weapons. I'm glad to see the Americans are not putting offensive weapons, which are more offensive weapons, which are aimed at China from there. Now, that, could create a kind of Cuban Missile Crisis style situation. So these are anti-tank weapons. So the idea is that if the Chinese invade, that the Taiwanese have got an ability to blow those tanks up. And I think, in a way, that's a good thing. That it does dissuade the Chinese from invading. But at the end of the day, nothing is going to dissuade the Chinese from invading, is it? Because if the Chinese decide they're going to do it, absolutely nothing is going to stop them. And you would think that the best route to stop that happening, nobody wants to see Taiwan invaded, certainly not anyone in Taiwan. I mean, maybe in America. So I think that's the parallel to draw, really, is that the United States likes to make these interventions, disregarding entirely the wishes and the welfare of the people in the countries that it's intervening. So it's telling the Taiwanese this is all going to be good for you, but actually it might end up starting a war where millions of Taiwanese would die. The same similar situation to what's been provoked over in Ukraine. So this is $10 billion, this money that's been voted for this military aid to Taiwan. But it's actually only 1% of this massive amount of the military budget, Defense Authorization Bill, which happens every year. It's the biggest one ever, $850 billion, which the United States is spending on intervening around the world. And they're saying, of course, that this is for defense. Generally speaking, the United States has got nobody attacking it. It doesn't need to do any defending. So this budget, logically speaking, should be zero. Of course, much of this money is going for US influence around the world outside the United States. So that's the real problem here, I think, is the United States is spending something approaching $1 trillion every year on creating these aggressive situations around the world. And I noticed in the Wall Street Journal this week, Ethan Kessler, who's one of their columnists, was saying that Taiwan must prepare for war to deter China. Well, what a load of nonsense. Of course, preparing for war is actually likely to inflame the Chinese and may create an invasion. The best thing to do is not to prepare for war, and then the chances are Taiwan will not be invaded.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you. Tony Gosling, investigative journalist. And thank you, John Ross, senior fellow, Chungyang Institute for Financial Studies. Thank you to you both. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review.
Meanwhile, tensions are simmering in the South China Sea following an alleged close encounter between American and Chinese military planes. The U.S. military claims that a Chinese jet came within 3 meters of an aircraft forced by the plane's wing over the rest of area of at least a week. A U.S. military spokesperson said that the incident forced the U.S. aircraft to take evasive measures. Another U.S. official said Washington has raised the issue with the officials in Beijing. China has frequently criticized the U.S. for sending ships and aircraft into the South China Sea, saying that such moves undermine peace and security in the region and between the U.S. and China. Relations have been tested over a body of countermeasures. Escalations over a slew of issues from Taiwan to military activities in the U.S. The United Nations says that it will not stop providing help to Afghanistan despite the Taliban ban on women working in the country. The UN resident coordinator in Afghanistan says the world body and its participants are committed to delivery of illegal life-saving services to the Afghan people. Al Jazeera, Arabkov, says that the country's humanitarian needs are, quote, absolutely enormous. He, however, added that it would not be possible to deliver the companies and the humanitarian aid without the participation of humanities. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
American voters are sharply divided by political party over which groups of Americans face discrimination. A Wall Street Journal poll finds, with more than 80% of Democrats saying that Black and Latino people face prejudice, while a majority of Republicans say discrimination is more often aimed at white people and Christians. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT had an eye on this issue, writing, "Most Democrats believe U.S. minorities face prejudice, while GOP voters think it's a white person's problem," according to the Wall Street Journal. Americans are divided along partisan lines over which population groups in the United States face discrimination, according to a Wall Street Journal poll published recently. While most Democrats point out that prejudice is the problem of U.S. minorities, Republicans tend to believe that it is the issue white people have to cope with. According to the survey, some 59% of GOP voters believe that white Americans face discrimination or prejudice, compared to only 21% of Democrats who agree with this point. Meanwhile, 88% of Democrats stated that black people face biased attitudes, compared with 49% of Republicans who said so. According to RT, Democrats are also more prone to thinking that discrimination against people of minorities is a problem, that is 85%, while only 38% of Republicans hold a similar opinion. The same split is noticeable over Latinos, with more than 80% of Democrats designating their prejudice towards the group as a problem. Only 40% of Republicans believe discriminations towards Latinos to be an issue. The WSJ survey also found that 61% of Republicans believe discrimination is a problem for Christians in America, with only 25% of Democrats supporting this view. The report also indicates that U.S. voters are divided on the issue rather by their political views than by race or age. These data, to some extent, echo the results of several previous polls. An October LX New YouGov poll showed that, despite a slight uptick in U.S. unity in the last 2 years, 8 out of 10 Americans still believe that they live in a divided country. Another poll, conducted by The Economist magazine and YouGov in late August, found that 2 in 5 Americans believe a civil war is at least somewhat likely in the next decade, with Republicans more prone to expressing this view than Democrats. Meanwhile, Brookings Institute wrote, "American politics at the end of 2022 is deeply divided, and on many issues, the state of discourse can only be described as tribalized. As the 2022 midterms demonstrated, Americans are split down the middle. The red wave, which was meant to provide Republicans with a sizable House majority and potentially Senate control, did not materialize. The American people did not deliver a clear mandate for the direction this country should take. And so we can expect 2 more years of bitter division as both sides make their case for why their differing visions of the country should be the one to break the deadlock." Meanwhile, the Associated Press also wrote, "Americans are more divided than ever. Gridlocks over social issues, race, gender, and the economy."
Food for Thought.
Salam, dear listeners. How about listening to thought-provoking words from the Prophet's sixth infallible successor, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, regarding the lofty epithets in the divine court of his most noble ancestress, Hazrat Fatima, peace upon her. Fatima has 9 names near Allah, the Exalted. These are Siddiqah, or the most truthful, Mubarakah, or the blessed, Tahireh, or the spotlessly pure, Zakiyeh, or the pristinely chaste, Raziyeh, Al-Marziyeh, or the one who is gratified and contented with God's will, Muhaddiseh, or the lady to whom angels speak, and Zahra, or the most radiant.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle.
Today's lesson, family pathology and misbehavior. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of family pathology and misbehavior in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that Islam gives importance to the family life, to the structure of the family, to the relation between husband and wife, to the relation between parents and the children, and so on. Therefore, it is necessary to respect each other, to do not misbehave with each other. And obviously, we know that there are differences in the life. The husband, there are differences in the life. Maybe the husband might have a difference with the wife, or similarly, it's vice versa. There's a difference of taste. There's a difference of style. There's a difference of performing something, and this is the part of the life. Basically, why it is the part of life? It's because when there are two different people meeting each other, when they're socializing with each other, when they're coming under one roof, living next to each other, having the relation of husband and wife, they're living as part of each other. Obviously, they were grown up into different environments, and they had different ways of, for example, learning things. Therefore, there must be a difference between them. We cannot say like the wife and husband must not have any kind of difference with each other. Otherwise, this is not a proper life. This is not a good life. The difference brings respect of each other. The difference brings the experience. Maybe someone has a good or better experience. The way I was doing it, if someone has a difference of performing something, and I can learn from that. Therefore, there is a learning process in the family system, and therefore that's why Islam says to do not misbehave with each other, to deal with each other in a good manner or behavior, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of family pathology and misbehavior. Now, when we say that the misbehavior is not allowed in Islam and in the family pathology, one of the issues that we see within the families is that when people are misbehaving with each other, they have a misbehavior with each other. And the point is, when husband or wife, they misbehave each other, they're not respecting the other's views. Therefore, it is necessary to respect the others. And this misbehavior, the minimum thing that it brings in the family system is to humiliate the other person. You know, when we misbehave with someone, the first thing that comes in the mind of the other person is that he is causing the humiliation. And this humiliation is not something which is good. It is not something which we need to go for. And we need to make sure that we are not causing the humiliation of the other person. Because when we are trying to prove ourselves, maybe the way I'm doing and I have a misbehavior in it, the first message that goes to the other person is the message of humiliation. And this causes the crack in the relationship of husband and wife. This causes the weakness of the relationship between the parents and the kids. When the kids don't feel respect from their parents and they feel humiliation all the time, they look outwards. If someone outside is giving them more respect, even if that person is evil, they will go towards him, even if they know that this person is evil. But the point is, at the time when they are talking to that person, they're dealing with that person, because he's not causing any humiliation for them, therefore they want the respect and they go towards the respect. Therefore, we should be careful, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
developing Iran, this episode of Developing Iran is not about throwing stones in the water, though. We are now at the Azadi Grand Complex. We want to hear the story of the progresses made by female athletes in the field of shooting from the managers and the athletes themselves. Iranian women in athletic fields.
اینجا یکی از بهترین سالن‌های تیراندازی جهانه.
This here is one of the best shooting places in the world. It has world standard lighting and sound. We are not allowed to turn on any lights, projectors, or camera flashes here. We must be quiet as well. Now, the question is whether females can become champion shooters. Is it possible? We are in the middle of the main competition. Taking these images is very difficult for us. After the competitors shoot their bullets, they can get a print of the results on printers. And it is also demonstrated on the monitors. Upstairs they have a room which is called the control room. After the victory of the Islamic Revolution, a new social role was defined for women, and gradually women were regarded more seriously in athletic fields. Eventually, after a decade, Iranian women emerged in athletic fields with a new image. Despite the lesser publicity surrounding them, their willpower for gaining higher places in sports had increased. The 80s and the decade after that can be referred to as the years that the groundwork was done and preparations were made for the growth of women's sports. In those years, women were able to gain some success. However, to gain Asian and world medals, one more decade was needed. With the start of the new millennium, women were successful in all sports fields. Among the sports fields that they had excelled in, women's shooting gained the most attention. Before this, I either didn't listen to women's sports news or I didn't take women's sports news related to international competitions seriously. However, now I have become very curious about it. A successful Iranian women athlete who had gained many medals in international shooting competitions.
خانم الهه احمدی همسر مادر
میز الهه احمدی وایف مادر اند چمپیون
اینجا محوطه فدراسیون تیراندازیه. پر پرنده است.
We are sitting in the yard of the Shooting Federation. It's filled with birds. Quite exciting because our shooter friends here believe that hunting animals is wrong. The birds have a serious presence here. Women shooters spend the morning in the 80-line place. They took part in a tight and close competition. In the afternoon, they came to the place for the finals. Here we have the extreme excitement characteristic of a shooting competition. In each round, the shooter who gains the lowest score is out, and the competitor who comes last is made to shoot first. Don't think that the competitors' scores are that much far apart. In this competition, a few hundredth of a point ultimately determines the winner. I think it's fair to say that there is plenty of hope, and I want to apologetically take back what I had said before. Days, I witnessed the strong willpower of Iranian women enduring hardship to gain championships. These difficulties are greater than those that any man ever tolerated. Maintaining the responsibilities of a wife and a mother alongside the duties of a champion is one of those hardships that us men will probably never have a chance to experience.
Special live coverage for the start of New Year 2023 on Saturday, December 31st at 7:30 p.m. Tehran time, 1600 GMT.
In the limelight.
Across Britain this winter, more people are falling into debt and sitting in cold and damp homes as a result of rising energy bills, which have helped push the country's inflation rate above 10%. This sharp increase is called fuel poverty, which happens when 10% of household income is spent on energy bills. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote in this regard, the upcoming recession is expected to trigger a wave of payment defaults in the UK. As the cost of living crisis squeezes British households, many have fallen behind on their bills, according to Consumer Insight Tracker. Data released recently shows that an estimated 1.9 million households have failed to make at least one mortgage, rent, loan, credit card, or other bill payment over the last month. The figure is up from 1.7 million households this time last year. The report indicated that missed payment rates generally tend to be lower in the lead up to the holiday period and peak in January, when many households in the UK have to pay back their Christmas expenses. The data suggests that there could be a significant wave of payment defaults in the coming months as the UK heads into recession, and consumers will only face further financial pressures in 2023. Data shows that energy bills have been missed the most, 2.3% of households, followed by council tax, that is 1.9%. Overall, renters were more likely to have missed the housing payment. Of those surveyed, 3.1% reported having missed the loan or credit card payment. Rakio Kancha, director of policy, said, "We are worried that many more people could be facing financial crisis in January as the credit repayments pile up and the cost of living crisis continues to bite. As so many people face financial hardship, it's calling on businesses in essential sectors like food, energy, and broadband providers to do more to help customers get a good deal and avoid unnecessary or unfair costs and charges during this crisis." According to the latest report by research group GfK, consumer confidence in the UK has remained at its lowest level in almost 50 years for 8 months now, as households across the UK grapple with the deepening cost of living crisis. Inflation in the UK reached 10.7% in November, according to the Office for National Statistics, which is more than five times the 2% target. Guardian also reported, with the UK heading into recession, mortgages and rent costs rising, and the energy price guarantee becoming less generous from April, consumers will only face further financial pressures in 2023, leading to more defaults, it warned. Unsurprisingly, perhaps the most common type of bill missed was energy, at 2.3% of households, followed by council tax at 1.9%. Overall, renters were more likely to have missed the housing payment. Of those surveyed, 3.1% reported having missed the loan or credit card payment. As so many people face financial hardship, the UK government is calling on businesses in essential sectors like food, energy, and broadband providers to do more to help customers to get a good deal and avoid unnecessary or unfair costs and charges during the crisis. We'll be right back. Last week, the Bank of England warned that significant pressure on households and businesses due to higher inflation and borrowing costs. About 4 million households in the UK are likely to face higher mortgage payments in 2023, with the average monthly mortgage payment rising to £1,000, up from £750, the equivalent to about 17% of pre-tax income. Earlier this month, the Trades Union Congress said 2022 has seen the sharpest fall in real wages since 1977 and the second worst on record since 1945. Analysis of official statistics found that the real wages fell by an average of £76 a month in 2022 as a result of pay not keeping pace with inflation. A year ago, the average household was spending around £1,200 on electricity and gas bills. Now that figure is £2,500. UK food price inflation hit a new high of 12.4% in November.
Saudi Arabia in the world of politics.
Part 3.
In recent years, Saudi Arabia has been the largest buyer of arms in the world and is making great efforts to continue on its path. At the same time, it is trying to start a coalition of its friends, especially the Arab countries, against Iran.
Talk is cheap. Let's look at the actions. Saudis helped Saddam Hussein for 8 years. Saudis helped Al-Qaeda. Saudis created Daesh. Saudis created al-Nusra. So they started this sectarian message, not us.
Nonsense. The Iranians are the ones who are exporting terrorism. They're the ones who are stoking the fires of sectarianism. They're the ones who are violating international laws and norms and acceptable behavior. And they're the ones who have been on an aggressive path since 1979.
Despite the fact that the United States and almost every other powerful nation supports Saudi Arabia actively and tries to undermine us actively, we are still the most influential power in the Middle East. That should tell you something. That should tell you that we have made the right choices and they've made the wrong choices.
King Faisal was assassinated by one of the Saudi princes on April the 1st of 1975. This worried all the allies of the Saudi family, especially the King of Iran. Almost a month later, in May of 1975, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi visited the new King of Saudi Arabia, King Khalid, to indicate the relations with that country were important to him. But no one knew that it was the last visit of the Pahlavi king to Saudi Arabia, and the next victim of the world of politics would be him. The initial reaction of the Saudi officials to the victory of the Islamic Revolution can be called a conservative one. King Khalid, in his first reaction, called the establishment of an Islamic government in Iran a prelude to greater rapprochement and understanding between the two countries. 3 months after the victory of the revolution in April of 1979, a Saudi delegation traveled to Iran. Simultaneously with the occupation of Masjid al-Haram, an unforeseen event in the eastern region of Saudi Arabia made the Saudi rulers angry with Iran. Shias in this area marched on the day of Ashura, demanding their civil rights while they were holding pictures of Imam Khomeini. The Saudi rulers, who were still involved in the occupation of Masjid al-Haram, reacted harshly to the incident, which resulted in 24 deaths on the day of Ashura in 1979. In June of 1985, the Saudi foreign minister visited the Islamic Republic of Iran for the first time. Saud al-Faisal's agenda was to improve the ties between the two countries and to encourage Iran to conduct peace negotiations with Iraq. In the same year, Iranian foreign minister Ali Akbar Velayati also visited Saudi Arabia. It did not bring much development in the relations between the two countries, but reduced the spread of tension. Shortly after the end of the Iraq-Iran war, Arab countries demanded repayment of the money they had given to Saddam during the war, and Kuwait was at the forefront of these creditors. Iraq's Ba'athist regime, which considered itself to be the representative of the Arab world against Iran, refused to repay its debt. Saddam also called for a reduction in oil production by Arab countries so that he could rebuild the ruins of war by raising oil prices, a request that was opposed by Arab countries, especially Kuwait. The continuation of tensions led to Saddam's invasion of Kuwait on August 2nd of 1990, an event that shocked the whole world, especially the Arab friends of the Ba'athist regime. The Iraqi army even crossed Kuwait and entered the Saudi city of Al-Khafji. The continuation of this campaign could seriously endanger the flow of oil from the Persian Gulf. Shortly after the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, its war machine shifted to Iraq. With the U.S.-led coalition attack, the Ba'athist regime, controlled by Saddam Hussein, was overthrown, something that had not happened even after the invasion of Kuwait. Now, Saudi Arabia felt that it had lost the game to Iran in two fronts.
This was central Baghdad today, as Saddam Hussein's regime finally lost control.
The statue of Saddam Hussein.
Iran had important enemies on the other side of both its eastern and western borders that had now fallen, and Saudi Arabia was not pleased with this victory and the change of balance of power by the United States. In the years that followed, the victories of Iran steadily increased. For Saudi Arabia, which has always tried to play a leading role in the Islamic world, the issue of Palestine was very important. Iran's support of the resistance movement against the Israeli Zionist regime created an axis that is known as Axis of Resistance. In addition to armed struggle, these groups were engaged in political activities in Lebanon and Palestine, and they could also gain some achievements. In July of 2006, Israel launched a land, sea, and air war against Lebanon, which continued for 33 days. The pretext for this war was the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah's operation of capturing Israeli forces on the southern border of Israel with the occupied Palestine in order to exchange the captives with its forces